I don't believe that the opposite of patriarchy is matriarchy. I think that there is a future that we want to live in, all of us want to live in, that is more equal, that is more grounded in love, that is more grounded in trust and respect. But I also believe that there has to be an unlearning of the ways that we've operated as people, both men and women. Women have to understand, okay, why am I doing this? Why am I at this table and I'm not speaking up? Why am I at this table and not requiring more chairs for other women?
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix. It's a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. Today we have the pleasure of hearing from soccer legend, New York Times bestselling author, and activist for equality and inclusion, Abby Wambach. A two-time Olympic gold medalist and FIFA World Cup champion, Abby has made an undeniable mark in international soccer history as an all-time leading scorer in the sport. On this episode, Abby will tell us about the norms that she's had to unlearn as an athlete in a male-dominated environment. She'll also share some of the key lessons from her upcoming book, Wolfpack, and how she plans to lead women into the future world of work.
It's one back. Oh, great kick, great kick. She really means business.
I'm the youngest of seven, and my family was very athletic. All my brothers and sisters played sports. So you could imagine I was getting carted from game to game, watching as much sports as I possibly could. By just the nature of me being in a large family and having my brothers and sisters play. And I think at a certain point, my sister Beth wanted to learn how to play soccer because some of her friends were playing, or football, as the game is known worldwide. And my mom had no idea how to play. My dad had no idea how to play. I think my dad only had played football, and he wrestled and he ran track. But there was no real understanding of what soccer was about. So they actually ended up going to the public library and checked out a book, like a how to play soccer book from the public library, which I always kind of find so fascinating, given probably how little I ended up spending in the public library because I was always playing sports. So that's kind of how my family got involved with soccer. And my first three soccer games actually played in a rec league team. I think it was comprised of both girls and boys. And I scored 27 goals in three games. So my parents felt like, okay, this is a little different than we had experienced with all the other kids. Though all of my brothers and sisters were excellent athletes, I think that they saw from an early age that what I was watching in them and seeing how they played the sport allowed me to be more advanced early on. And, you know, of course, after those games, my mom asked me, Abby, why didn't you pass the ball more? And I just very matter-of-factly said to her, well, I don't understand the problem, because if the whole point of the game of soccer is scoring more goals than the other team, and I can do that better than anybody else, I don't know what the big problem is. Like, why don't I get to score the goals? And she thought, okay, well, we're going to have to work on a little bit of humility throughout her career, for sure.
While Abby recognized her natural ability, it took her a while to develop a passion for soccer.
I think I was a little bit scared of the possibility of my life in a lot of ways. I didn't really fully invest in what I see now, kids investing their time into their sport or their craft, whatever they're gifted at. So it took me a long time. And I think that if you marry that with the increase of popularity of women in sport, I kind of just came of age during the time in which women's professional sports was starting. Women's professional soccer was basically non-existent when I was a young kid. And because of that, you know, I think that I was playing for fun. And I think that that only could take me so far. But when women's professional soccer and the United States team won the 96 Olympics and then the 99 World Cup, there's this other thing that started to grow inside of me, this passion, this deepening of the possibility. And I think I could actually see it a little bit more. So, you know, it's kind of this love affair that I had with the game. I kind of was rejecting it very early on. And then as soon as I started to see maybe I could have a career doing this outside of college, after college, and make a living doing this, I started to really think, oh my gosh, like I can't waste any of this time. I can't waste my talent. I can't waste my time. So I really kind of dove in and focused so much on my fitness, which is in fact the one thing I was actually lacking the most in my game in my younger years. And when I did that, I guess, as they say, the rest is history. You know, I was consistently making the teams and I got on the 2003 World Cup team. And I stayed on the national team ever since till my retirement. So, you know, I think that everybody has a different path that they get on. And I'm just so lucky that I grew up in a time where women were starting to get more respect, where women were starting to get actually paid.
Abby made it to the 2003 World Cup team and won numerous medals and championships until her retirement in 2016.
I remember the very first time I got onto the women's national team, I think that we were making, I don't know, I think at the time it was like $2,500 a game. And I thought that was the coolest and most amazing thing ever, to be able to play this sport that I dedicated my whole life to, that I had no intention of it being able to in any way repay me in financial gain. You know, I got to go play a game and I actually don't even think that I played in one of those first games. I think maybe I played 18 minutes or something. So, you know, I thought that was pretty good, $2,500 for 18 minutes of actual playing time. But yeah, so, you know, I think that as I look back on my life, you know, and as many people do as they get older, I think we all should do that a lot more, to take a little bit of understanding and stock of what we've done and why we've done it and where we're going. You know, I'm so glad that women's football especially was kind of on the up and up right at the perfect time for me in my life as I was kind of heading out of college.
Today, Abby is a sought-after speaker who's encouraging women to unleash their individual power. In 2018, Abby delivered a commencement speech at Barnard College. The speech went viral and became a rallying cry for women everywhere.
When I was entrusted with the honor of speaking here today, I decided that the most important thing for me to say to you is this: Barnard Women, Class of 2018, we are the Wolves.
The Barnard speech was a labor of love in a lot of ways for me, because I was in this weird transition period. It had been a couple of years since I retired. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't really know what I was good at. And they asked me to come and give this speech. And I really thought hard about what I would want to tell my 22-year-old self. And you know, I think we grow up, all of us, we're all raised to believe certain things about the way the world works. And women especially have a tougher road because we have not seen equality, whether it be in pay or treatment or just in respect. You know, I think that all of those things comes down to being seen as a true equal. And you can delineate that however you want. You can break that apart however you want, but it really is just being seen as an equal human being. And for the history of humanity, women haven't been seen as equals. And we could go into all the reasons why we think that is. I believe, though, that this gratitude piece is something that I really had to dig deep in myself and to witness and to understand the moments throughout my life that I was just grateful to be there. You know, and I found myself on the ESPY stage standing next to Kobe Bryant and Peyton Manning. They had these illustrious careers, amazing guys and, you know, icons in their sport. And we're all three of us receiving the same award. And I found myself just standing on that stage thinking to myself, wow, I am so grateful to be here. And then as we turned to walk off stage, I had another moment and another feeling. And, you know, I can't say all the words that I was feeling in my head, but I realized all three of us were walking to three very different retirements. And the rage not just in myself, but the rage that came up in me about the whole system and the way that the system is set up for women to beg and plead their way through their lives just to get ends meet, just to get a bare minimum. It didn't feel right to me. And I had to actually honor and really relate and understand, oh, I'm actually a little bit of part of this problem also by just being grateful.
Following this inspiring message, Abby wrote her second book entitled Wolfpack, which is set to be released next month.
I'm so proud of it because there are so many lessons inside the book that I needed to know and that so many women don't know, right? And one of the parts of the book that relates to this gratitude thing, it's not just their greed, right? It is our gratitude that keeps us lower, that keeps us down, that keeps women oppressed. And I believe so much that as women, right, what makes us unique and what makes us beautiful and what makes us want community and want the right things for the world, peace, harmony, love, the gratitude and demanding what you deserve have to go hand in hand. It can't just be gratitude, but you can't have just greed either. We need to have both because otherwise we're just going to be continuing the problems and escalating the problems that we see right now. I don't believe that the opposite of patriarchy is matriarchy. I think that there is a future that we want to live in, all of us want to live in, that is more equal, that is more grounded in love, that is more grounded in trust and respect. But I also believe that there has to be an unlearning of the ways that we've operated as people, both men and women. Women have to understand, okay, why am I doing this? Why am I at this table and I'm not speaking up? Why am I at this table and not requiring more chairs for other women, for other representation, for the people that we're making these decisions for? And I found myself curating and cultivating the speech last May and just kind of like, it was like an onion. I just kept peeling back all of these layers of who I was and why I was. And I think that being a professional athlete, I was able to unlearn some of the societal norms that many women don't get to unlearn. I was in this like really unique ecosystem inside this women of badassery with these other U.S. national team players that we didn't really always operate by the same norms that the rest of the world operate under. I think that sport is this beautiful equalizer between men and women. I have found to gain so much respect from men because they know inherently that I could beat their ass at any sport we go and play against each other. And because of that, there's commonality and there's also respect. We as women is a responsibility, though we didn't create the problem, right? We are a part of the problem and it's a responsibility to be a part of the solution. And the number one thing to unlearn is to become aware of our actions and become aware of what's happened and why it's happened and how we are actually being a part of the oppression.
Here, Abby shares what she thinks men can do to better support women in sports and life.
I think the great mistake that a lot of activists and feminists take is that they leave men out of this equation, right? They leave men out of this solution. In my mind, the men have to be a part of the solution. Because here's the deal. I am not a man hater. I actually want to work in concert with men. I want to connect and to be a part of community with men. That is a part of my social structure. That's part of my humanity that I require. I just think it's important that men understand to have a little bit of perspective and empathy, you know, to try to envision themselves in the shoes of somebody else, whether it be a woman or any marginalized person. When you can try and put yourself in somebody else's shoes, your heart opens up and you get closer to a solution rather than perpetuating the problem. You know, nobody has the answer because if they did, then this problem still wouldn't exist. And I think that one of the easiest ways to break it down for me, and I'm not angry at all men everywhere, is that they have been drinking the same Kool-Aid that we have, right? They have been operating under the same context and the same system that we have. It's not their fault either, right? So we can't blame every single man on the planet for the oppression of women. We can't do that. But what we can do is say, listen, guys, do you believe that all people should be treated equally fairly. Treating somebody with respect doesn't cost a single dollar. You know, I find myself fighting for pay equity. That's a huge topic of mine because it hits very close to home for me. I played women's professional sports. I played on a more popular team than our men's team, a more successful team than our men's team, yet we were still getting paid less. You know, those two things don't add up in my mind. But I think that when we talk about what are the solutions here, I think we just have to talk about what is the actual nature of what's going on and not point fingers and not blame one gender or the other, right? This is a humanity problem. This is a people problem. And, you know, it's an easy understanding when you think about wanting to have power. You know, people in power want to keep power. And what is the number one thing to do for people who are in power to keep power? It's to keep those that they are in power over afraid, right? To keep them afraid of each other and then fighting against each other. So you have all of these other marginalized groups. And if you keep them fighting against each other, then they will never have enough connectivity and enough power to overturn and to flip the script.
While Abby might not see equality happen in her lifetime, she says that she'll never stop fighting to try and achieve it.
Especially now, I'm becoming so much more awake and aware to some of the microaggressions that I see from my high school son. You know, he comes home and he shares stories about what happens during his day. My middle school daughter, they share stories about what happens in their day. And just some of the things that come out of all of their friends' mouths, you think it's kids being kids, but that is where the understanding of how the societies we live in work and function. And I think change is hard. I think that people want things to stay virtually the same. Even the ones that are being oppressed, I think change is more scary than freedom. And because of that, that's why we see these things perpetuate itself. But, you know, I'm not going to ever stop fighting.
Throughout her career, Abby has experienced sexism and oppression. Here she shares what all of us can do to start fighting inequality.
I think that both little girls and boys they read fairy tales. You know, that's how we learn our languages. And this specific fairy tale was kind of an interesting one for me to dig into. And I'm obsessed with wolves to begin with. So for this to have the connectivity to the wolf story that I told in the speech and that's in the book, you know, it was just like this perfect thing that I was like, this is it. When I really got into it, I was thinking, yeah, some of these labels, some of these stories that are depicting what a little girl should be or what a woman should be, they don't fit me. They don't ring very true to who I know myself to be. And then it just kind of came to me and I thought, wow, I was actually never Little Red Riding Hood. I was and I am the wolf. And I think all women need to feel permission to be the wolves of their lives. I think all women out there have to understand that there is a different way. I have seen it. I have experienced it. I have felt sexism throughout my whole life. But because I have fought through it in a lot of different parts of my career and the way that I think and the way that I go out and try to approach leadership, I know that there is accessibility to becoming the wolf. The very first thing that women have to understand is that they are and they can be if they want to be, but they have to understand that it's a possibility first. And I think that that's why this book is so important to me. That's why writing it was so important to me, not just for the world, but for myself. There's weird stuff that is happening right now in our world, stuff that we can't understand, stuff that's going on in politics and the financial world and wars and religion and things that are really complex. But what we can do on a constant basis is remember who we are.
Because of the challenges she's had to overcome, at the end of her 15-year career, Abby is committed to empowering women leaders across industries.
I have prided myself on creating a program, a leadership company, it's called Wolfpack Endeavor, to help other women, especially in the corporate world. So we work with women in the corporate space to take them through a process of self-awareness, of learning how to communicate with this athletic mindset. So it's my mission to lead women into the future. I think using an athletic mindset is like what I called earlier the great equalizer. I think that it will allow women to unleash who they are so that we can all actually get to the next level of where we need to be in our evolution as people and as a species.
Abby shares that empowering women leaders is critical to the future world of work.
I understand that companies want to save as much money because they want to make as much money because their market cap and their stock price has to stay at a certain level. But I also understand that if you want to be a company that goes into the future, you have to think about your entire workforce, not just the ones that are making big decisions that you think are the reasons why the needle is moving for your company. You actually have to have representation at the leadership table, because whoever your consumers are, whoever and whatever your products are, the decisions about how the product is going to go into the world needs to be done by both men and women and people of color and marginalized people. If you don't have your finger on the pulse of where the world is going, you will die. Your company will die. And it's going to take an investment. Have the people inside of your company, tool them, give them the tools to be able to do their job better. Give them the opportunity and the environment to grow. Give them the path to promotion. And if you give women an opportunity to lead, they will succeed. This I know to be true.
Finally, Abby shares what her life is like today after retiring from the sport that she loved.
I'm as happy as I've ever been. I have 3 kids. I live in Naples, Florida on a golf course. I'm blissfully happy, but I'm also so hopeful because I think that one of the things that we forget about is that we actually can take action. Inaction creates despair. Action creates hope because you're doing something. Just do something positive for yourself, because I believe that every person is meant to be on the planet and there's a reason, but we all have to unearth what that reason is. And when you find out why you're on the earth, then you got to go put your imprint on it. The world needs people to help fix the problems that we see on a daily basis.
Today on Fairy God Boss Insights, we'll share several tangible ways companies can advance women at work. According to a worldwide survey by Accenture, women are 22% less likely to reach manager level than their male peers. In their 2018 report titled When She Rises, We All Rise, Accenture offered real actionable solutions to reach equality in the workplace. The first way we can reach equality is by having women on leadership teams. Having at least one woman on a leadership team can triple the number of women in the company's management pipeline. The second thing companies can do is to be clear about what good looks like. When leadership teams are held accountable for improving gender diversity, companies are 63% more likely within a 5-year period to see an increase in women leaders. The third action companies can take is to implement parental leave policies and offer internal networking and mentorship opportunities for all employees. And finally, organizations should establish trust with their employees. Women's advancement at work is accelerated when employers encourage freedom and creativity. Thank you all for tuning in today. I hope you really enjoyed our episode with Abby. If you like our show, please don't forget to leave us a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I hope you all had a wonderful International Women's Day, and I'll catch you guys again next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.